Welcome to the All Souls Forum here on KKFI. I'm your host, Christina Frazier. Tonight, our guests, Dr. Manny Pedram and Matthew Westra, will discuss the history of the United Nations and review some of the reasons why bigotry, hatred, and religious and ethnic conflicts continue to persist in the 21st century. This show is recorded on October 28th at All Souls Unitarian Universalist Church here in Kansas City, Missouri. Our show begins with the speaker's presentation, followed by a short break, and then concludes with the question and answer part of the program. Thanks for tuning in. Now let's join the conversation here at 90.1 FM, KKFI.
I'm Rita Norton, a member of the forum committee that organizes these platforms for the discussion of significant issues, especially those that involve ethical values in the contemporary world. The United Nations was founded just weeks after the traumatic, murderous throes of World War II, with the hope of preventing future international wars. In many ways, more than 70 years later, it still struggles to do so, regardless of incredible difficulties. Manachair Pedram has been closely associated with the continuation of the ideals of the United Nations. Matt Westra studies causes for the UN's falling short of its ideals. Both men are here to discuss Manny's new book, United Nations and Global Discontent. Manny, your turn.
Thank you. Good morning. October 24, just 4 days ago, we celebrated the 73rd anniversary of the United Nations. Not the United Nations just as institution, but the values that it represents for all of us. The opening chapter of the United Nations Charter states, "We, the peoples of the United Nations," not the government, the peoples of the United Nations, "we can save the succeeding generations from the scourge of war. We have faith in human rights. We can practice tolerance and peace." At the same time, Matthew is going to show you the book that I printed last year, and it's called Global Discontent, which really, if you look at last week's event, you can see how discontent the globe is. That book recently received international recognition. I was surprised to see it displayed in Frankfurt, Germany, one of the largest book exhibits around the world. How many of you are aware that this church flies the UN flag regularly every day and not just the weekend Sundays? Only two hands I saw. That's great. UN celebration in Kansas City began in this church, also Unitarian, in 1949. At that time, Frank Baxter, that still some of you may remember, he was president of Layman League. He combined a number of members of this church as well as civil and political-minded, civil and political-minded community. They went and met with Mayor Kemp and to see how he feels about celebrating the United Nations. Apparently, Kemp gave his approval because they came back and they formed a committee and decided they like to have the first presentation of UN on television. So they invited the Belgian Council to be interviewed on WDAF, which just began opening as a part of Kansas City Star. And according to Mrs. Kemp, Mrs. Baxter, the station was so brand new that they didn't have two chairs for Frank and Belgian Council to sit on. And they have to go around to find two chairs for them to sit. So after the interview, they made that in the air for everyone to hear. But that wasn't the beginning. That was the beginning, but not the end of the UN celebration. People like Charles Webb, Giddens, Dr. Reverdy Giddens, Dawson's, Sheldon and Luana Stahl, and myself, we were all pushing the United Nations in this church for years. In September 1981, Don Moon asked the senior minister, asked me if I want to be the first UNO envoy in this church. I thought he is offering me a high-paying job. I said, of course. I'm still waiting for the first check to arrive. But we have had for more than 20, 30 years here since 1981 on a regular time, not only celebrated the United Nations, but also activities of United Nations. I know I gave the first children's rights issues right here in this church some years back, followed by disability issue. All Souls and UN Committee, UN Committee, UN, UNO Committee, have been doing that for many years. I know I covered 15 years, followed by Charles Webb and then Sarah Pedram. And due to generous contribution for member of this church, our church is one of the blue ribbon congregations at UNO. I think now we get to the book. I'd like to ask Matthew if he likes to make some statement.
Good morning. So Manny assembled this book, which looks at decades of global discontent, as the title states, and it's easy to complain about what is wrong. He also, in the book, addresses what can be done to resolve this. Now, we see in our world today, in our own nation, an increasing movement towards nationalism and isolationism, that we want to pull back to just be ourselves. But that is not the world in which we live. When you see made in whatever nation stamped on a product, you need to recognize that not everything is just from within that nation. Perhaps the raw resources and materials were imported from somewhere else, or components were manufactured or assembled somewhere else. And so when people say, buy an American car, is that a Honda made in Tennessee? What is an American product? What is the American economy without including the globe? You look at when we had the financial debacle of 2008. Did that just stay in the United States because we had subprime mortgage lending? Or did it take out the economies around the globe? So we see the concerns over issues like global terrorism. Well, as we know, the pipe bombs that were just sent. Now, somehow that's not been labeled terrorism in the higher echelons, but that is domestic terrorism. We need to look not just away, but at home, and that's part of the entire global community. Now, with the book that Dr. Pedram has published, he came to me very early. I've been involved in his organization, the Global and Multicultural Education, and asked me to have a look at it. I was teaching a class on intercultural communications at the time. I said I'd like to share this with my students, and you can get their feedback, people who don't have degrees in the area, people who don't have expertise, and see, are your ideas something that they can understand and reflect upon and be influenced by? So a collection of students took up as an assignment, they got credit for it, to read the manuscript and review it and give feedback on what needed clarification, what they thought was excellent, how it might change their outlook. It was a great opportunity for them to see that books don't descend from on high, that in the story of Moses, he didn't come down the mountain with God's Ten Commandments and the books in the library, that these are actually put together through manuscripts, through editing, just like their papers. And so they got to see that in its formation. It was a good experience for them, and it was good in that I think it made a better book. Those students are mentioned in the acknowledgments in the book. Definitely, we see a wide range of ideas. The book is fairly thin, but it is packed with issues and solutions and ways to rethink about how to continue to be a global humanity. We cannot isolate. It will not work. We see what happens in North Korea's isolation. You look at the pictures of the globe at night and you see all the places lit up and this dark spot that is North Korea. This is isolationism. So we definitely need to recognize that the globe is in discontent and that the people who are the self-proclaimed leaders are not necessarily those who should be guiding where we're going. And that's why the UN Charter says the peoples, not the leaderships, not, as Manny pointed out, the governments. I do want to point out that this has been an ongoing issue, that 38 years ago this week at the forum, Dr. Pedram and a few other members of All Souls were on a panel at this forum on these same issues. So it's a long and perhaps uphill struggle, but it's one that's worth perpetuating. So you saw the cover of the book. It is for sale out in the lobby, and it is worth thousands, but we're not asking you to pay that for it. So pick up a copy, and let me point out also, the real highlight of the book is the foreword, just saying. Yeah.
for the first time Secretary General of United Nations to celebrate the 73rd. Is going to go to Japan, visit the two bomb cities, to remind the world that this is what happens if we do not get together and try to find a way for human rights, recognition, all diversified religion, and peace to work together. But this book I have here, one of the best things happened to me was that Matthew took it to his classroom and used some of the volunteer students to do pre-publication review of my book. And I was so impressed with the review that I knew I have to publish it. I've been working for quite a number of years, but that was the decision I made. So I hope you can see what the issues, that doesn't cover the whole book, but give you the basic of my recognition of the issues that faces today's global community. And hopefully we can answer some of the questions by you, the peoples of the United Nations. Thank you.
For the listeners at home. All right, so if we could go back then to the first slide so that we'll have it all in the recording rather than silence. So from Global Discontent, The Mosaic of Cultural Diversity by Dr. Manushera Pedram. Global discontent is a personal view and reflection of our turbulent period of human history in the first quarter of the 21st century. Factors that have created conflict between nations and have polarized nations and the global community. Manny Pedram. Global discontent is about the 21st century, a turning point for a united world community. The Commission on Global Governance report proclaimed that in the 21st century, the collective power of people will shape economic equity, reduction in poverty, environmental sustainability, international diplomacy, and global governance. A new vision was to prevail, and there were positive signs that the millennium is a century that is less violent and more harmonious and peaceful. Did I miss something? Oh, okay. Finally, humanity is finding alternatives to violence and discord. The future is to be more democratic, more secure, and more sustainable. The Millennium Development Goals, the MDG. The Secretary General of the UN proudly introduced in 2000 the Millennium Development Goals, the MDG, to eliminate inequality, promote gender equality, global partnership, and environmental sustainability by 2015. The 7.6 billion human population have more in common than differences. In addition to similarity in human features, humanity has similarity in hopes, dreams, aspirations, pains and pleasures, joys and sorrows. Yes, they are culturally, nationally, racially diverse, as well as economically, politically, and in lifestyle and belief systems. Cultural diversity. Individuals are born within and influenced by specific cultural settings that connect people within that culture. Culture is neutral because it is a glue that connects people within a society. Culture is our ID for unity, diversity, and human sustainability. The mosaic of cultural diversity. In the 21st century, there is demand for recognition of cultural differences, lifestyles, religion, and way of living. Demand for human equity and elimination of hunger, poverty, and injustice. The interconnected global community. Cultural differences are an opportunity to examine the variety of human experiences and cultural struggles for survival, as in mosaic art. Diversity of humanity, shape, color, gender, and lifestyle form a beautiful masterpiece of total humanity. Human differences. Human differences have created centuries of conflict, discord, and wars. Historically, chiefs, emperors, dictators, and kings. Today, nations with big bombs and advanced war technology continue their reckless abuse of colonial domination. The cycles of human journey through history, tribal society to serfdom to imperial dynasties to colonialism to nation-state building. In the 21st century, humanity has moved beyond national borders to globalism. The 21st century and globalization. Globalization does not mean acceptance of Western lifestyle or westernization. Globalization or universalism implies the interconnection of people of diverse nationalities, culture, religion, and lifestyle, forming pluralism on planet Earth. It has interconnected people with diversity. The need for universal laws. Globalization has increased demand for universal laws that are applicable to all nations and universally acceptable and enforced. The demands. People everywhere, men, women, and children, black, white, red, and yellow, Muslim, Christian, Jews, and others, asking for a peaceful world society and harmonious global community. The sources of discontent. Challenges of global power brokers, global cultural diversity, economic inequality and injustice, immigration and refugees. Ecological responsibility. Corporate interests and corporate spending, corruption and greed, and protecting the American dream. Planet Earth is divided and fractured with no harmony in sight due to distrust, overwhelmingly militarized world, politically aggressive and economically dominating nations, and continuing disastrous conflicts. World power brokers disregard poverty, inequality, and disastrous continuing wars. The military imbalance and major powers' defense budget. Human community suddenly appears to be in never-ending wars. National defense budget is out of control. In the 21st century, no nation appears to be winner without complete destruction of human societies. However, U.S. and NATO warplanes fly far distances to unload their bombs, regardless of how many thousand men, women, and children are killed or wounded. The market economy and conflicts. Sanctions, blockades, boycotts are proven ineffective strategies used to hurt ordinary people. The sale of our military hardwares to Saudi Arabia, Egypt, Israel, and Gulf states has empowered these states to join in war games in defiance of global order. Sources of discontent, mistrust, and fear have placed enormous pressure on individuals and states. We accept limitations on our civil liberties and constitutional rights. Fear has caused us to accept cameras on every corner, carrying guns and looking behind us. Corporate societies and barriers. G7 or 8 or 20 are not globalization. G7 has created dissatisfaction between corporate economy of rich and powerful nations and those with centuries of isolation who see themselves marginalized and their culture dominated by big corporate economy. Social and political health of planet Earth in the 21st century requires a new vision, new diplomatic thinking, and building a new world order to eliminate poverty, hunger, provide equity, universal health care, and other human rights to benefit all for a lasting peace. A new vision for the future. What is the shape of the future that humanity wants? Are we ready for a diversified, equitable, nonviolent, and peaceful international community, or do we continue unrestricted armament and global violence? A true global vision. The true vision could be realized when every individual has the perception that he or she is empowered and there are opportunities for everyone to realize his or her potential within their own culture, their own religion, and lifestyles, beliefs, customs, habits, and lifestyles. Empowerment. When people are empowered, there is success in their community as a whole, in education and in business, in entrepreneurship and in art and culture. The 21st century. Humanity in the 21st century is in need of caring, confidence, and openness to all faiths, cultures, and nationalities to achieve a harmonious and interfaith global society. Children and the unforeseen future. Children are the most beautiful creatures and the most vulnerable ones in every global community. Children are considered property of parents or guardians to discipline by any means, love or abuse. The best of humanity. Observing a group of children occupied by a colored leaf, a small worm, or a captured snowflake, we notice the moment of joy, curiosity, and happiness among all, regardless of diversity of children's culture, race, color, or gender. It demonstrates the capacity of the human family to reach the zenith of humanity. Children under 18 and their rights. Children are exploited as child soldiers, trafficked across the border, in labor markets, carpet weaving, used in commercials to sell donuts, junk food, and more, contrary to the World Children Treaties, the UNCRC. Violations. Conflicts have taken an enormous toll on families and refugee children fleeing from local conflicts, war, and seeking asylum. Parents have been separated from their children without regard to short or long-term mental and psychological considerations. Educating for global citizenship. Teaching for global citizenship must be indispensable and a continuum from early childhood to graduate courses at the universities. The 21st century demonstrated globally interconnected economic, socio-political, and environmental issues. Promoting and fostering knowledge of intercultural relationships is important for future job seeking in the international community. The United Nations still is a unique system that has the capability to change the dynamics of old social, political, economic, and human sustainability. Teaching global citizenship is imperative. Looking to the future, there is need for a universal, pluralistic global community in which human rights and human reason overcome hatred, bigotry, religious, and ethnic conflicts. Thank you.
Declaration of Human Rights in some form of treaty, and if so, how well do we abide by, and what are the enforceability of those rights?
Well, United States really is the major part of United Nations. They were a very important part of establishing United Nations. Unfortunately, Senate has been one of the factors in many treaties, including human rights, that have not really followed what it should be. They have not ratified many of the human rights issues, such as children, women's rights, disability rights, a number of others. There are about 25-6 human rights issues that we have had very little part in recognizing. And that's unfortunate for a country like the United States that should be the base of human rights issues.
Since I don't see anyone behind me, what do you propose that we do to make these 25 basic human rights part of our system of law? Do you think that some political party should adopt those principles and say, you know, this is what we believe. Let's make it law. Let's make it enforceable. How do we get this to the forefront?
Knowing that the Senate plays a major part in recognition, is we the people have to know what to elect, what to push, what issues, right to Charles Babb used to sit here every week and have an envelope and letter to congressmen. I wish we had that force today to do that. Thank you.
I'd like to add to that, we have an election. Some of you might have heard about an election coming up in a week and 2 days. And definitely how we vote. Voting matters. Sending the message to Congress, to the Senate. Often the response, the criticism is we already have solid civil rights legislation in this country, and so we don't need the redundancy. Another complaint is about maintaining United States sovereignty, that we are our own nation and don't want to hand over control to a global big brother organization that can come in and enforce our laws, that will take care of that for ourselves. So those are the some of the primary stumbling blocks. Yes, next.
Hi, my name Hello. Is Crystal Baird, and I didn't intend for my question to lead in the way that it seems that it has, but my question is, what is the potential role of the UN, the United Nations, in being a watchdog on nations or organizations interfering with a sovereign nation's elections? Because I see that that could be potential that they could step up and denounce.
Well, the United Nations, remember, is people, nations around the world. It's 193 nations right now part of the United Nations. What the most important United Nations has been is NGOs or civil society. They are ordinary people who represent us in United Nations and every human rights that I can think. NGOs had a role in pushing it for years. They succeed in some, they don't in others.
What would you consider to be some of the most prominent successes that the UN has brought forth around the world since it began?
Probably economic and welfare of people has been the major part. They have reduced the poverty due to NGO, they are still pushing international health through health organization. So I say welfare area of the people that really is factor in peace and harmony. That's the most important job of UN.
So we also have things like mosquito eradication, and it gives a venue for NGOs to work with, getting educational opportunities in for people who didn't have that opportunity previously. And again, safe drinking water and health issues. So many children around the world die essentially from diarrhea and the dehydration that follows that because they don't have basic water and clean, you know, facilities to cook and gather water with. And so, a horrible way to die and how many children we lose. In the U.S., we have the luxury of having a baby and expecting to get an adult, but that is not the case around the globe. And so that's some of the areas that the U.N. is having some success with. Unfortunately, not on things like, ending wars. Remember, World War I was called the war to end all wars. And, yeah, that's not going so well.
The Middle East, by is the center of a great number of conflicts between nations and within nations, although it's certainly not the only place in the world. What has the UN been doing to ameliorate these various conflicts and their effects on non-militants? And what possibly could we do that we aren't?
Well, the Security Council is the one responsible for conflicts. And United States and major powers have veto power that really can prevent any action is suggested by UN. Right now, I say that veto power still remains one of the very, very major issues for change in bylaws of the United Nations.
Also, I was interested in has the UN been able to do anything on the ground to help the people in Yemen and Syria and all to survive?
Yes, you're talking about peace builders around the world. This city has a peace building statue in Independence that really is in honor of peace builders. And they're trying, but unfortunately, even UN has become an issue for some countries because they feel they are pretty much following the United States and major powers' decision what to do. As you notice, the budget of war, we have $700 billion, which is larger than seven major countries in the world, which is China, Russia, European countries, and so on. Why are we using that much, except we want to be on top of power? And the United Nations is supposed to bring equality between powers and nations, that every nation, large and small, has a chance to participate. And here we are unable to do that.
Let me add that the UN, of course, provides a venue for negotiation and for neutral ground, but also that concern that was mentioned previously about the sovereignty of nations, that the UN can't go in, you know, with a hammer and just say, you must do this and you must behave, that these sovereign nations essentially have the right, have the freedom, have the capacity to be warlike and to try to expand their influence or their territories.
Another factor I can see, instead of United Nations, we have built regional coalitions. NATO is a major power that influences every decision. And they do have both the power and the military domination to use. Then we have other, a smaller group. If there is a United Nations, that should be the really primary, not the other smaller groups that participate.
Dr. Pedron, you stated that the Senate of the United States is in control over what they do. How can we allow the president to automatically say we're pulling out of the human rights? That didn't give the Senate any notice, any vote. How can that happen?
Now we're into a civics course. partly, you know, any president can say whatever it is that they want. It's up to the Senate to then jump in and say, wait a second, that's not up to you. And do we have a Senate that is willing and able to convey that message currently? Well, there's an election, I think, something about, and
I tell you,
just we keep having those, and people keep not showing up in droves.
Just to follow up on Claudine's comment, the last declared war by our country, which requires that the Senate adopt a declaration of war, was 1942. So we've had the Korean War, the Vietnam, Afghanistan,
police
Iraq.
Actions.
Yes. And, you know, the Senate, the Congress has not stood up and said it is our responsibility under the U.S. Constitution to make those decisions. They have been lackeys. They have been just, you know, not doing their duty.
Okay, I think we've fallen into speech rather than...
I have a suggestion, look, crazy as it may be, but I think that maybe nationally the Unitarian Universalist should say the Universal Declaration of Human Rights should be adopted. You know, we are universalist, and this is a universal principle. Mm-hmm. It's just a crazy idea that I think we should propel forward.
It's time to write a book.
We have... forgot what to...
That's right. I think
Senate and we do have separation of power, which is wonderful and a very important part of Constitution. Unfortunately, that separation is kind of going away. There are people who are advocating even the courts should be elected or sent. We also do have a Senate, a president who have recommended, for example, a right of child was recommended to the Senate several times by Clinton. It was actually signed by Reagan before that, but the chairman of or Senate majority leader said, we don't want to even talk about it and stop the use of children's right to be approved. When 190 some signed it already and ratified it. So that separation power is not in practice today. That's the issue.
Hello again. So, Dr. Pedram, you said that the first thing that the UN really should be doing is fostering and promoting peace and harmony among nations. And, you know, I full-heartedly agree with that. And I feel that a practical application probably of that is ending ethnic cleansing and genocide throughout the world. You know, I think that the UN was created never again in regards to the Holocaust. Unfortunately, that's not been the case. So how do you see that? If nothing else, if we can do nothing else to end genocide in the world, how can the UN stand by that, honestly, guiding principle and actually be able to do something about that?
Well, you have big issues here. I have said for many times in writing and speaking in the past, education is the key. Bombs not going to do. I know I was talking to somebody some years back. He said, we can bomb them to death. We have done that now 17, 18 years in Afghanistan, Iraq, Somalia. Has not happened. We need education. And... as long as we use our bomb to scare people, they dislike our education also. That's why you have groups in Nigeria and so on, Boko Haram, they are the one really, in reality, says we don't like Western education because it gives us different lifestyle to live. We need to be cognizant of the different culture, the way they want to live, maybe by education, slowly change the process. Saudi Arabian woman finally got the chance to drive, but they killed the person because doesn't agree with the government. That's where we need to recognize that.
If I can add that the United States' chief export is culture. We do it through TV and movies. We do it through political and economic influence. We do it with clothing. And we need to do a couple of things. One, we need to get our own act together, because before we export, you know, look at how great we are, they can keep pointing out the chinks in our own armor of greatness. We have, you know, rampant inequality. We have all manner of, you look at the question about the genocide. We have one of the most successful genocidal efforts in known history. We did that and then started preaching to others about the evils of it. And so we need to kind of check some of our own hypocrisy. And then the other part about exporting culture, we have to recognize that when we fiddle with other cultures, they're not going to appreciate it. They don't necessarily think that we are what they want to be. And it takes me back to grad school. I had a professor who had worked with training but going into other cultures and helping out. And they showed a picture of this large family sitting around a bowl of rice with almost nothing in it. And then another family with only one or two kids with this great big bowl of rice. And it said, see how much better you have it if you can limit your reproduction. And they said, yes, but look how sad that family is, that they have to fill their bellies because their hearts are so empty. And that's culture. And when we export our value system, we have to recognize these are people who are legitimate in who they are, in what their history is, and we go in and change other people's borders and then say, you are a sovereign nation. And they think, those aren't my people. That's a different clan. That's a different society. That's a different culture. When we complained about Saddam Hussein, bombed his own people, gassed his own people, that's not how they saw it. The Kurds were not their people. They were a different ethnic group. And so that's kind of like telling the KKK that, you know, African Americans are your fellow Americans. They're not going to see that these are us. It's an other.
Every culture has good and bad. I mean, that's the way we have lived, because long-term tradition, we are still looking to 19th century, some of us. Some of the people here still looking to 19th century instead of 21st. So education, change comes through education and through interrelation between cultures. You can't just go bomb a culture to change. You need to participate in recognizing theirs and slowly making the change. That's really the best way to go.
We have time for one more brief question, and coincidentally, we have one person up at the mic.
Well, do you see the UN having a role in dealing with oligarchic behavior around the globe that seems to be outside of the role of government? And and in fact, expanding throughout not only Russia, but Europe and the United States.
That UN apologize? I'm sorry, I didn't get the full...
What can the UN do about the growing role of oligarchy?
They have to participate more and do what they're doing and try to make changes they want. Is that what... correct?
Yeah, that's a big question. Unfortunately, we're out of time.
That saves.
Thank you so much, both of you. Yeah, it's kind of hard to stop. Because our speakers are involved with this morning's service, we won't be adjourning to the library today. After the service, however, you'll be able to purchase the book today. First, however, our honorarium, the humble, but U.S. and Union-made forum mugs. Thank you very much, Manny and Matt. Next week's forum will be Dave Helling, sharing thoughts about the midterm elections coming up 2 days after Dave Helling speaks next Sunday. You're all invited to stay for the service as well. Thank you, folks.
Thanks for listening. I hope you've enjoyed tonight's presentation, United Nations and Global Discontent, with Manny Pedram and Matthew Westra. This program was recorded on Sunday, October 28th at All Souls Unitarian Universalist Church. All Souls Forum is edited and produced for broadcast by Christina Frazier. Our theme song was composed, performed, and recorded by musician Fred Potter. This program will be available for podcast within 1 day of broadcast on the KKFI website, kkfi.org. Remember, you can also find archived All Souls podcasts and many other interesting and enlightening public affairs programs produced by KKFI on the KKFI website. Thanks for joining us this evening, and we hope you tune in next week, same time, same place, when we will continue the conversation here at 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City's community radio station.